Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome to a bonus episode of the Whiskey Congress podcast. Steve and I are together. We mentioned after the last show that we would be talking a little sports and getting away from politics for a bit. We can now talk about things that after the NFL Sunday was played. But before we do that, let's talk a little college football. Because the Big Ten, which decided they weren't going to play college football, then they might, then they might not. Now they're saying they are. I think they basically looked at the number of dollars they were losing out on and said, we got to do this, but call me cynical.
I think money was a part of it. Money's never not a part of it, and you can't be, I mean, you'd just be flat out naive or lying if you said it wasn't. But I think that there were people, there were administrators and schools in the Big Ten that were legitimately concerned about the health concerns.
Oh, I agree.
And multiple school, I mean, a lot of these schools have very well world-renowned medical schools and facilities attached to them, right? Michigan,
sure.
Michigan State, Ohio State, Northwestern, all of them.
Yep.
So I think that once those groups kind of got together, and we know that this is what happened, or at least this is what they're saying happened, that, you know, there were multiple, you know, I guess I won't say studies, but there was information that came from the different medical schools and the different medical teams in the Big Ten that said it's safe to play. You know,
right.
I mean, long story short, that it was safe enough to play. You know, teams need to take, you know, these precautions. You know, we need to limit who travels and who travels where, and we're going to limit overall exposure by, you know, keeping everything within the Big Ten, which, you know, there was some, you know, when schools decided to do that, there was a little bit of a pushback, and it makes sense just in terms of being able to control things a little bit better if you have a school that can't play because of an outbreak or whatever. But I mean, I think there were legitimate reasons why they were finally okay with coming back on board. They don't look great in this whole thing. I mean, because everything is so immediate, right? Like, if
sure.
you don't make the right decision immediately when I think you should, then if you do anything different, then you're like,
right.
it's just, it's so ridiculous.
Oh, you can't win in this situation, right?
You can't. And I think that they were smart. They didn't just jump back in. They didn't buy into the politics. Now, people are saying, well, Trump called him out. So then all of a sudden, Trump called him out, and then they decided to play. The Big Ten doesn't give a fuck about Donald Trump. Please hear that. The Big Ten does not give a fuck about Donald Trump. You know why? Because there is nothing he can do to impact their dollars, right? There's
true,
just not.
True.
There's just
no,
there's
no. I think Donald Trump gives a fuck about the Big Ten.
Oh, sure.
Wisconsin, Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely. But the Big Ten, those schools, they don't give a fuck about
right.
Donald Trump. Oh, well, Donald Trump said we need to play.
Are you suggesting that he took credit for something he didn't deserve?
It's not even that. I don't even think he didn't take credit. But, I mean, you know, his talking heads and surrogates are going to go out there and say, well, Donald Trump said that they needed to play, and then they found a way to make it happen. No, I think that their initial move was we're going to look out for the players. Now, there's plenty of argument and debate. Like, I got a guy that I went to school with who now works as a player rep, and, you know, he's like a go-between. He's not quite an agent, but he's somewhere in the middle.
He's Eric Murphy.
And his whole thing is that, you know, if you're going to have the players play during a pandemic at a point in a lot of schools where the students are all remote learning, and the staff, you know, they're teaching because the staff doesn't want to get exposed and people don't want their kids exposed, and you're going to put the kids on the field and play, then, and at the same time, you're coming up with reasons why you can't pay the players, this hurts your credibility on not paying the players. That's a separate conversation for a different day, but
sure.
I mean, I think it's worth throwing out there, like, you're going to put these kids on a field to play football during a pandemic. While on the one hand, I will sit there and tell you that I'm at a point where I'm relatively comfortable with the idea of a return to normal, right? I mean, as much I know it's a taboo thing to say if you're not on a certain political aisle. But
within reason, too, right? You're still going to wear a mask.
I don't know, man. I don't want to go down that road right now. But I think that it is a little bit of an intellectual dishonesty to say that the kids got to learn from school. Like, these same players can't go into a classroom. They have to learn virtually for all their classes, but yet it's fine for them to practice and play other teams in a sport where there is a lot of close contact.
There is.
Right?
But it's outdoors, typically, or in very large spaces.
What in the actual fuck does that matter when you've got a 300-pound person laying on top of you and sweating and spitting in your mouth?
Because I think it does matter.
I think it doesn't. Jim, if I go over there, if I come right now, whether we're indoors or outdoors, and I spit in your mouth, it doesn't matter where we are.
Please don't do that. but I do think that the risk goes down when you're in a bigger space versus a confined space. What I've read in this, I know it's changed constantly, and I'm not a virologist. But from my understanding, it's in close proximity for extended periods of time that causes a problem. And if you're in a wide open area with good ventilation, I think it's lower risk. That's everything I've read says that. You're right. You're right.
I mean, I think if there's a chance of catching an airborne disease, I don't think whether we're playing indoors or outdoors, like when you're playing football, it doesn't matter. Right, if the guy, you know what I mean? Like,
I understand what you're saying. If
a D tackle has a cold, there's a good chance that the guard that he's over the entire game probably ends up with a cold sometime after the game. Can we agree on that?
I mean, it's likelihood is higher than if you don't smash into each other 70 times.
That's in the game. All I'm saying. Okay, yeah. Okay, I mean, like, we can go with technicalities and ratios and numbers, but come on, let's have a little common fucking sense here.
Well, but I'll point to common sense. People being in an outdoor... I think the Ozarks thing did end up resulting in a whole bunch of people getting sick, but they were...
We just had a super spreader event here with a fucking Christian rock concert.
Yeah, I heard about that. Fuck. All right. Anyway, big sense of
Florida.
True.
The whole state.
Well, all right, moving on. I'm not mad at you. I do stand by that it's safer to be outdoors than indoors, but is it safe? I don't know. And they're doing that. Like, I went to the dentist today and I had to get my temperature taken and fill out a thing. And they said, "Have you been coughing today?" And I was like, "I did cough this morning." Like, "Well, was it worse than usual?" And I said, "No." And then, okay, we can tell you that we need to pull one of your teeth out. I understand what you're saying. You're not wrong, although I do think that dismissing the fact that it being outdoors changes things is inaccurate. I think having fresh air and space matters. Please don't spit in my face.
I don't think it matters when you're playing football.
All right.
I just don't.
All right.
Having played it a lot, I just don't think it matters when you're playing football. Like, when one guy got sick, we all got sick.
But you know what? But that probably happens to you in large part because of the locker room, which doesn't dismiss your logic. Because how many times in the... NFL and college has been where one guy gets the flu and suddenly the whole team has the flu. There have been like five times where word broke that there was a flu running through a team and I didn't bet big against them. And every time I was like, fuck, I should have made that bet. Because even if you're not sick enough that you can't play, if you're one step slow at that level of athleticism, it changes everything.
It does.
And so in that regard... You know, I wonder what they're doing in locker rooms. I wonder if there's space in our lockers.
I mean, I'm sure they're spacing guys out as much as they can, and I'm sure there's all sort of protocols about showering and towels and all that other stuff. I mean, I can't even imagine how annoying and obnoxious it is as a player. I mean, I just remember being that age. Like, there were certain things, like, they changed the rules on how we were supposed to, like, turn in our laundry, and we were all like, this is the worst thing in the world. So, it was something so stupid where we used to just hang our dirty shit in our locker, right? We put it in, like, this mesh bag. Sure. We hung it in a locker, and then Paul would come and grab it, and then, you know, and we would watch it. Right? Yeah, and then it would end up back in our locker, right? And then they changed it. And they're just like, all right, now you just take it, you know, drop as you leave. And it was so convenient. You walk out the door, his thing was to the left, you drop it in. Like, it's got, you don't have to do anything. Cause as long as you put your shit in the bag, it's got your number and your name on it. You drop it in the bed and then you leave. We're all like, fuck that. Why? Why? It's fucking anarchy.
No. You look back at that and say, what a bunch of snowflakes you were?
What about snowflakes? Like, we just, like, we were just idiots. Like, I mean, we were literally fucking idiots.
This is oppression.
Right.
Well, what would William Barr have said about this?
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, we did complain about it out loud, right? One of the older guys did complain about it out loud. And Whip looked at us, and Mark Whipple, our coach. He looked, like, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck, what did you just say? Shut the fuck up. Like, and he didn't acknowledge it again after that, and we never brought it up.
Let's be clear, Mark Whipple was right.
He was 100% right, right? We never brought it up again. Like, nobody even grumbled about it. It was just like, all right, I guess we just put the laundry
over here. I have to carry a bag of 5 yards. This is right. Horrible.
I mean, and I think I actually tried to make a legitimate argument to Jeremy Kane, the lineman. I'm like, man, because now I got to carry my bag with my book bag and this. Like, that's ridiculous.
Have they built a monument to the terrors that you had to go through? The horrors of carrying 2 bags for 10 yards?
It's ridiculous, Jim. I'm a scholarship athlete.
I'm trying to think of a proper swing low, sweet chariot. All right.
Go
ahead.
But yeah, I mean, like, so the Big Ten decided to come back and play. So that gives us the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Big Ten. Pac-12 is still holding out. Pac-12 probably won't be back.
COVID and the fires, they got
right. I mean, they got, and there was just an earthquake out there. I mean, like, there's a lot going on. So, I could see the Pac-12 just not coming back this year. And there were some independent schools, like Notre Dame is playing, I believe. And
I think I saw him play the other day. Actually, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, I know for a fact that I did. Because I got a lot of friends that are Notre Dame fans, and it was all the rage. Speaking of UMass and Mark Whipple, UMass decided that they're going to play in a shortened schedule,
How is that going to work?
I don't know. I'm not sure why they're doing this. I'm not sure how it makes any sense. I'm not sure, like, financially if it makes any sense. I love my team, but right now we're not in a conference. We're independent, so I don't even know who we're going to play.
Social distancing in the stands won't be a big problem.
It will not be a big problem. Is never a problem.
That's my joke.
So one thing, we are consistently socially distanced in the stands, at home and away games, unless we play somebody that has a, you know, rabid fan base, which then it's just like, oh, this is what it's like playing for a big school. But
sorry, being a dick, but kind of.
No, it's fine. So that's where we're at. So, you know, the Big Ten kicks off October 20. I was just looking at the schedule. October 24th.
24th, okay.
And what's funny is that Nebraska gets to open at Ohio State. Now, Nebraska was one of the schools that was clamoring, like, we'll go to another, we'll jump into another conference and we'll play independent. We don't care. We want to play anybody, anywhere. It's like, oh, do you? Okay, fine. Then you get to open with Ohio State, right? Like, you get to deal with that. They get to open at Ohio State.
It doesn't matter on the road in terms of fans right now, but
yeah, I mean, I also don't know what the fan situation is going to be. They may have made that announcement by now. I haven't picked up on it, but it will be it'll be interesting. I hope now, because normally I'm really neutral on Nebraska, but Scott Frost really annoyed me with this whole thing. We'll play anybody anywhere. Like, oh, you're the big bad bullies of the Big Ten. Get the fuck out of here. Shut up. Hope you get drilled by 70. the little midget quarterback.
Who's that?
I don't know. Whoever their quarterback was. Okay. If he was five, if he was 5'7", I would be amazed. And he was.
See, I kind of like Scott Frost in the sense that he put.
I did too until all of this, okay. And then it's just like, oh, now I can't stand you, right? Like, okay. I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, you as a coach, he as a coach, doesn't have the standing in the conference.
That's absolutely true.
That's 100% to run his mouth the way that he was.
Or the school doesn't have the standing.
Right.
The
I mean,
not that Nebraska isn't
prominent.
Well, right. Nebraska, if they were a Big 8, Big 12 team, you're new to the Big 10.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in the Big 10 long enough where I guess
have they made any impact in the Big 10?
No, they haven't. No, I mean, they've had a couple decent runs, but they really haven't.
They've never won a Big 10 title.
Right, which is fair, but I mean, I just, like, he's new to the conference, he himself as an individual.
Sure.
the school's kind of like middling in terms right. of football. Just like take it easy. Like this isn't going to be the thing that puts you over the top. Like you just make sure you win enough games to keep your fucking job.
Right.
Right. Like now you need to make sure that you actually don't get throttled by a pissed off Ohio State team that's frothing at the mouth because they haven't been able to play and they want to get their rocks off before it gets too cold in Columbus because the season is starting too late. So there's a lot that he needs to take into account and worry about before he goes.
Goes rogue and, oh, I'm going to go take my ball and go home.
Right.
All right, man.
Jim Harbaugh barely even has the credibility to run his mouth the way that he does. Well, the way that they get thought
Jim Harbaugh runs his mouth a lot, but Michigan has the clout.
Yeah.
All right, so the NFL weekend was a lot of fun for me. The Bills beat Miami in a closer game than I would have liked, but it was fun to watch Josh Allen go off. You got to watch the Steelers at home. Sitting in your home because they were the local thing because the Browns were playing Thursday night. Right. So you got to enjoy
and I saw, the game. I have DirecTV Sunday ticket. I was able to confirm. So,
oh, okay.
It was, you know, the Steelers game was closer. I mean, your game was closer than you thought it should have been. You know, the Steelers knocked out Denver's quarterback, Drew Lock early. And then it ended up like they just didn't really, they were never able to really put their foot on the neck and keep it on the neck with Denver. And so the game ended up being closer than it should have been, but they were able to, you know, finish it off and get it taken care of. And really in the NFL, you know, you just need to win, right? This isn't college. No one gives a fuck about style points. At the end of the day, you know, if you go 10-6 or you go 11-5 or whatever it is, no one looks back and says, oh, well, I mean, this loss or this win was close. They don't say, and they also don't say this loss was really close, so it doesn't impact you at all.
And more importantly, right, when you get to that point, and not more importantly, but on the same wavelength, you blow a game early in the season and then come to the end of the season, you're like, well, if we wouldn't have blown that game against this lesser opponent, and you look back and take yourself.
And listen,
the Steelers
and the Steelers have done that. Previous years under Tomlin have been notorious for just playing down the shitty teams and then losing to those teams, and it costing them trips to the playoffs, or costing them positions.
Staying in the playoffs. Yep.
I would say both. You know, last year it was more we didn't have Ben Roethlisberger, so you know you go down. But I mean, even still.
You
finished 8-8, but had you beaten San Francisco in a game where your defense got 5 turnovers, even though Roethlisberger was hurt in that game, then
now you're 9-7.
Right. Well, actually, he got hurt against Seattle, but or whatever it might be. But like either way, you're 9-7, and you make the playoffs. So beating these lesser opponents or these teams that aren't as good as you are supposed to be, according to paper and stats and everything else, is critical. So I'm glad they got the win. And you know, they've been the last couple of years, they've been good at making adjustments. So I think that they'll be better going out the next week and clean some of that shit up, but it's also a different opponent. So.
Right. But, before the game, so the Steelers made an agreement to wear a name on the back of their helmets, a taped on the back of their helmets. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the kid's name, but he was the kid that was shot by Pittsburgh police. And one player from the Steelers, Al Villanueva, chose to put a different name on there. And this is your story, so I should probably just throw to you.
Well, yeah, so he ends up putting the name of a black soldier who was killed in combat on the back of his helmet. And, you know, Marquise Pouncey also ended up changing the name on the back of his helmet. And, you know, I'm okay with all of the above. I don't know if I would have chose to put the kid's name on the back of my helmet. Like, now, I don't know a ton about the story. As it reads, apparently the police officer thought that someone had pointed a gun at him, so he ends up shooting a kid a couple times in the back.
He jumped out of a car and ran, as I recall, and shot in the back, yeah.
And so it's just, it's a questionable situation. I don't think there's body cam, or maybe there was body cam footage, but the body cam footage doesn't really answer any sort of questions.
I remember, I don't think it was body cam footage, but someone got on
something
iPhone
along those lines. Yeah, I wish
the cop did shoot really quickly after the kid started running, but again, there is a lot of gray area.
So I think I'm perfectly fine with Villanueva saying, you know what, I'm just gonna break ranks here. He's earned it. He's a West Point graduate and a combat veteran, and you know, I believe he may have a Purple Heart, and if not a Purple Heart, I know for a fact that he has earned multiple medals in the line of duty. So he's 100% earned it to put whatever he wants on his helmet in this under any circumstance. You know, whether you agree with, you know, the wars that we're in and the reasons why we're in them, the fact is that we have people who are willing to fight them. You're not, right? Like, not you individually, right? But I mean, for the most part, I mean, we don't have the draft anymore. This is something that he volunteered to do, and he didn't just go and enlist. I mean, he went through West Point to do it. And that's a legit commitment. So I respect him wholeheartedly, and I have no issue with him breaking ranks on this. I you know, Marquise Pouncey, he's another guy who broke ranks on this, and he does a lot of work with the police and the community. His big issue is creating better relationships between urban communities and the police. Whether it's in Pittsburgh or his hometown back in Florida, like that's what he is passionate about, and he didn't feel comfortable with the information, the facts from this story, having that on his helmet, and he said it was a decision that was made, we weren't given a lot of information. Once I looked into it, I decided, you know what, it's not something that I wanted to do, so he took the name off the back of his helmet. I don't think he replaced it with another name, and I'm okay with players doing that, and I think, you know, as a team, I like the stance that the Steelers took. They said, we're all going to stand, and we're going to lock arms, and we're going to be a united front. I like that aspect. The putting the name of a person on the back of the helmet, just, again, with me in this whole thing is you can, like, you've made your statement with the standing and the locking of the arms. Putting the guy's name under questionable circumstances on the back of the helmet, I don't know if I would have done it. Right. Because to me, PR matters. Right. For the very progressive left, it doesn't matter. They don't care. Their whole point is to get in your face. Right. The whole reason they choose the names that they choose, Black Lives Matter, in your face. Fuck you. Right. If you're not going to get behind us because you don't like the name, you're a racist. Fuck you. Right. Like if you don't like defund the police, then that means you support the racist oppression that the police provide. Fuck you. Right? It's like whatever name we choose, like if you don't like the name, then like off the rip, fuck you, because you don't align with it. And that's their whole point. And, you know, that's the way they choose to go about it. Me just looking at it from a professional standpoint, from a NFL PR standpoint, aside from the social impact, it's just like, look, we can do a lot more good if we have our platform. We alienate and piss off enough people, we lose our platform. So we have to balance the two things, whether you like it or not, right? And if you don't give a fuck, which some people legitimately don't, some of these players don't, they made their money, they're like, look, I'll do what I want to do, I'll kneel, I'll say this, I'll say whatever, I'll put whatever on my shirt, and deal with the consequences later, that's fine too. You know?
I've got a problem with people who went after Villanueva, and I didn't know about Pouncey, but him choosing to honor someone that maybe he knew personally, I got the impression he did.
Yep.
And, you know, for him to say, well, you know, if we're going to honor people who lost their lives, and in this case, you know, in combat, I feel much more strongly about this person I served with than with a situation I don't know all that well. And right. If I don't put that name on my helmet, no one's going to know who the fuck this guy was.
Right.
So he's...
I mean,
so
I think his point is, Black Lives Matter, and this particular Black Lives Matter is the... Black life is the one that mattered that I want to be...
To be recognized or heard. Yeah. So I've got no problem with what he did. I actually do have a problem with the people who tried to challenge him on this and act like he was disrespecting the kid that got killed in the police shooting, because he's not... Just like when we say Black Lives Matter is not saying cops' lives don't matter or white lives don't matter, him putting that name on his helmet didn't disrespect this kid. It was his way of saying, hey, this is a guy that I want to honor, and I respect the hell out of that.
And this is the issue that you're going to have. You know, progressives are very passionate about this, and I understand the argument, and I understand it, and to a degree... some of it I can support, some of it not, and the people don't like it because it's too wishy-washy. I don't know, fucking fight me. But with progressives, on this, because I mean, progressives and a lot of Democrats, and I think those are two different things, but just for the sake of terminology.
Sure.
You know, they feel that if that you need to support their movement, and it needs to be done the way that they want it to be done. And if not, they're just going to fight you tooth and nail no matter what.
Right.
And now, part of the reason why I understand it is because, again, and we talked about this on our main show, but you, after a while, the country as a whole, the United States, there's going to be a come to Jesus moment. There's going to be a reckoning, right? Like, you cannot enslave a group of people. You cannot then have Jim Crow, segregation, make those people fight a civil rights battle where that fight is still going on in certain places. You can't have issues where you have systemic racism in your policing, right? And it doesn't mean that there's a system of racism that's intentionally trying to hurt people. It just means that some of those policies, through time, as they evolved, have had a disparate impact on a certain group of people, sure. And it's based upon race. You can't have all that shit that has happened. You've done a piss poor job of trying to deal with it. You've tried. Some things have worked. A lot of them haven't. They've worked, not only have they not worked, but they've actually done the opposite of what they were intended to do, especially when you look at housing and you look at education. So you do all that shit, then you're going to have a reckoning. You're going to have a come to Jesus moment. You're going to have people that are pissed off. You're going to have people that are no longer going to take your bullshit. They're not going to say, you know what? We tried to be reasonable. We've tried to be reasonable. We tried to do it your way. So now, fuck you.
Well,
you know, I mean, they're going to go, sure. Like, whatever, we're going to call it whatever we want to call it. We're going to be as aggressive as we want to be with it. And so they'll look at a guy like Villanueva, and that's where, for me, it's easy to draw a line and say, nah, you got to leave him alone, right? Like, you got to back off. But they won't listen. They will not listen. Those that attacked Villanueva on this, like, they're essentially a lost cause when it comes to, like, common sense and rationality. And that is also the problem of the left, because there is no, like, for them, they've just decided that there is no more, they're not willing to give anymore. They've given too much, and they're not willing to give.
That's a big problem. And I'll be brief about this, but I actually had a bit of a flip side of that this weekend at the Bills Bar in Cleveland. Ended up sitting with a guy who was probably in his mid-60s, and he made a comment that he didn't know if he was going to be able to watch the Bills this year because if they knelt during the anthem, he wasn't going to be able to do that. I'm like, well, I respectfully disagree. And things got quiet for a bit, and I tried to explain, well, here's what's going on. And I didn't want to create a situation. I'm sitting alone at a table with this older guy. But it's kind of the flip side of that is anything that doesn't fall into your rah-rah pro-America. I mean, there is no better form of protest than one that causes no damage at all and draws attention.
Yeah, so we've proven time and time again, this isn't about the format of the protest, right? It's about who's protesting, it's about what they're protesting, and that's the pushback.
It's an uncomfortable subject for people who don't want to deal with it, and their mentality is, well, if we just go back to the way things were, where we didn't need to worry about this, which is really easy to say if you live in Bay fucking Village, Ohio, but yeah. If you're a black person in America, you're like, fuck you, status quo ain't so great.
Right, I mean, and you have these lines that are drawn in the sand. It's permeated sports. Well, but the funny thing is that it's never not been in sports.
Sure.
Right, politics has always been interwoven in sports as far back as you can go back to fucking Rome. Right? But right. I mean, but even you know, even
I was
more
gonna go Jackie Robinson.
Well, I mean, sure, Jackie Robinson, but Muhammad Ali. Right, I mean, you've got
Jesse Owens, which precedes all of those guys.
Right, but I mean, like Jesse Owens, Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali,
John Carlos.
Yes, Dr. Carlos Dr. John Carlos and Tommy Smith. You know, and one day we got to talk about that story, like the full story, because that's a really fascinating story.
It is a fascinating story.
Really, from start to finish, and the end isn't what happened at the Olympics. Right? I mean, there's a lot that happened that after.
I've read Jesse Owens' biography, and I've read a little bit about Dr. Carlos, and it is a phenomenal and powerful story. And the fact that Tommy Smith literally got told, go home, and we're taking your medal away from you, is something that doesn't get reported a lot, but
right.
Derailing.
Yes, but and like I said, we'll talk about that on another show. But I mean, the idea that, you know, people say, "Oh, I don't want politics in my sports." Like, your politics have always been in your sports. As long as you've had black athletes, even when you didn't, politics was
sure.
interwoven into sports. So even that argument is bullshit. And it really comes down to who's doing the protesting and what they're protesting about.
Right.
Period.
And I mean,
you know, because if these guys were kneeling about not having to wear about, you know, face masks.
Or,
right?
having to, or having to carry their laundry an extra 10 yards.
I would support that. It wasn't even 10 yards because my locker room was so close to the front door. Like, you walk through these big double doors and me and Kane and all these guys, like, all our lockers were right. Like, we were the first row when you walk through the door and go to the right.
That was kind of a dick move.
Right? They were right there. Part of it. And then, like, so for us to leave, like, in theory, I could have just walked out, dropped my laundry off. On the way out the door, out the facility, I could have just grabbed my bag. Like, I didn't even have to ever really carry two bags. It would have, but whatever.
Free Steven. I'm going to protest. I'm going to lay down in the middle of the street in West Park, Ohio, to protest the horrible treatment you received while carrying your own laundry for 10 feet.
Yeah.
But, all right. So, this is a bonus episode. We're at 30 minutes. I do want to talk about one more thing before we go. Deion Sanders is going to be the head coach of Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi. Now, I am not a fan of Deion. We either are overrated, underrated. He was one of my overrateds. We don't need to relive that. But I actually want to give him credit because I don't know if he'll be a good coach. In fact, I'm really curious.
I doubt it.
I would say a lot of times, guys who are so physically gifted that the game came easily to them suck as coaches. Ted Williams was a disaster as a baseball manager. Because he couldn't say to a guy, well, just wait till you see the seams and hit it right between those two seams. Like, okay, Ted, you can do that because you're a freak.
Right.
I can't. So, like,
Ted Williams, you have 1,000 vision.
Right.
I don't.
And
so, with Deion, I think, here's my issue. So, this is actually a little bit more layered than I think we're initially giving it credit for. But there's some things here. So, he's going to be the head coach at Jackson State, school out of Mississippi, a historically black college. And this is big because in the black community, there's a thought that there needs to be, like, black people in general need to put more resources into historically black colleges, right? If you don't feel that you're getting the chances and the opportunities at these predominantly white schools or traditionally white schools or whatever, then maybe we should be focusing on building up historically black colleges. And one of the ways to do that, a lot of the thought is through sports, right? So instead of black athletes going and playing at Duke or North Carolina or Michigan or Ohio State, right?
Because Duke, outside of their athletic program, really fucking white.
Yes, right? I mean, even their
basketball right. program.
So, I mean, Bobby Hurley and Christian Leitner. But, you know, so the thought process is the black athletes, instead of playing basketball and football at these big universities, if they all went to historically black colleges, then that would raise the profile of historically black colleges. People would want to watch the historically black colleges because that's where all the athletes are. And that would bring in TV money, that would raise the money, and then that would bring up the quality of the schools. And they could offer a better education. More black people would go there once the profile was bigger. And then that would generate this whole thing. Right?
And more highly recruited black athletes. When you say more black people.
Well, no. I mean, just like, if like, because a lot of times, like, one of the biggest reasons why I didn't even consider historically black colleges, the only one I knew was Grambling. Right?
Okay.
And FAMU.
I knew Southern.
Right. I mean, I knew Grambling.
Bayou Classic every year. I watched the Battle of the Bands, and that's what I knew.
Right, I didn't, because I didn't give a fuck about the bands. I still don't.
I didn't either. I just knew that happened every year. It was always on the weekend of Army-Navy and shit, right? It was the same weekend.
Sure.
Right. Anyway, growing up, that's what I remember.
You know, I mean, it's my sin as a black person not knowing much about historically black colleges. But, so the argument is bring in high-profile athletes, the sports, you know, then that brings in, you know, the TV money, raises the profile of the schools, and then more people will send their kids there, more kids will want to just go there in general, and then that will help those schools eventually get to the same level as some of these other schools and institutions in terms of the education that they can provide, along with the, you know, athletic opportunities for the athletes. Now, I don't agree with that. because ultimately, I have a very cynical view of cable TV networks and colleges and universities. And so the issue is, even if you were to get 70% of your high-profile athletes to go to historically black colleges, you're not going to shift. Like, you're not going to lose Notre Dame fans because black athletes aren't at Notre Dame. Will the games be as good? No. But if you, these same people who will not watch the NFL because black guys are kneeling for, because, you know, police brutality, right, and everything else, you think, because you're pulling from the same fan base, mind you, right? Like, it's a little bit bigger, but you're pulling a lot of the same people from the same band. Like, you're not going to, like, you're going to pull, you know, a very small percentage of people from the big schools to watch, and will that be enough to actually draw in the TV money, right? And those big conferences and those big schools, if you don't think that they're not going to throw roadblocks in your way so that you don't get those contracts and you don't get that TV money, you are out of your fucking mind. I'm not saying that it can't be done, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but the idea that it would just, like, if all the black athletes go there, then boom, you've solved your problem, I don't know if that's actually true.
Well, there's not enough schools to draw away all the black top prospects.
Right, that's the other aspect, too. I mean, like, at some point in time, like, a kid's going to look at it and just be like, all right, no, well, if most of y'all are going there, I'm going to go over here.
And if Jackson State, I mean, all right, first of all, let's be real. How many great black athletes have played for Oklahoma, Alabama, Auburn, states and colleges that haven't exactly been good to minorities as a whole?
Right.
A lot of them. I do think, I give Dion credit to a degree because he's taking on a new venture, and he could be living the cushy, you know, broadcaster life, and he's taking on something that is going to be a challenge. I mean, between recruiting and the day-to-day life of a college football coach, it's
I guess
a challenge.
This is
so
my
I respect
other,
that.
Well, yeah, I guess. But here's the thing. If this were a white coach, right?
Okay.
NFL.
It's Steve Largent.
Right. If this were Steve Largent walking into a school and just saying, all right, now I'm the head coach. I would have the same thing I'm about to say now, not even Steve Largent, because that's so far removed from anybody who gives.
And really, really white. But,
right. But no, I mean, I don't care
Tom
about
Brady.
White.
Let's say Tom Brady.
No, we'll say Kurt Warner.
Okay.
All right.
Fine,
Kurt
sure.
Warner, people know him, right? I mean, still super white, but the whole point is that it's a white guy, so that's fine.
Okay.
But Kurt Warner, and Kurt Warner walked into I don't know, Youngstown State.
Okay.
And said, all right, really I'm the head coach. I would have issue with it, just like I have issue with this. Why?
Because he's never been head coach before.
Head coach? He's never fucking coached the position.
Right.
Like, Dion was really good, and I think that the idea, like, this may be a little bit different than your Ted Williams analogy, just because football, especially over time, Dion covered a couple different eras, and he, like, football is a game you have to study, right? Like, it's not enough to just be super talented. It's just not. Like, you have to understand defenses. You have to understand coverages. You've got to understand what offenses are trying to do. You have to understand schemes. You have to understand, like, those are all things you have to do. And I've listened to Dion. Dion knows football, right? Like, we can make fun of him, and he's prime time, and he was an asshole, and you think that he was just fast and all that other stuff. Dion was legitimately one of the greatest NFL players of all time, says everyone except for you and some douchebag on the internet. So, I mean, he knows football enough to where I think that he can coach the game, but being a coach, that's not just something that you do. Like, you, like, even Harbaugh, both the Harbaugh brothers started at lower levels coaching positions,
yeah, sure,
right? In most of your all of your NFL coaches, right? Like, all the guys in the NFL, and even a lot of your college coaches that were NFL players had to start somewhere coaching a position. So now we're going to take Dion and we're going to put him in charge of the entire program, right? And even though it's Jackson State, it's a smaller program, there's a lot that goes into coaching, being the head coach of a football team.
Sure.
Like you said, recruiting.
Organizationally. I mean, how many times have we seen a very, very successful coordinator in the NFL fall flat on his face,
yeah,
when he tries to take to the next level because it went from you're managing one group to managing eight.
Right.
And more than eight, actually.
Right.
Because every position has a position coach. And then there's a special teams coach, an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator. That's a managerial thing that right. is really
And
tough.
You're not just managing football. You're dealing everything else that comes along with it. Like, players have issues with grades. You know, players get pissed about where the laundry goes. Like, right. all that sort of stuff.
Whiny douchebag players right. cry about carrying
yes.
a bag of laundry.
Yes, absolutely. you know, like, players... You know, getting suspended for dumb shit. You yeah. know, grades.
Especially in college, right?
Especially in college. I mean, because in the pros, because they're least, dumb. Yes. Like, college football players, we were stupid, right? We were stupid
as
then.
A
they're still stupid now.
Nerd, I was stupid.
Right. I mean, like, so you're dealing with kids between the ages of 18 and 22. Like, they're, I mean, they're a hair above fucking, well, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just not super bright.
Eject, eject, eject.
But all that is, it's a lot for a guy to take on. And he's played a long time, so maybe he could take his experience as a player for... I mean, because he played in the league for fucking, what?
15 years is
maybe longer, right?
I don't know the numbers, but he played a
right.
long
I mean,
time.
He played, I mean, he played damn near 20 years. So he's been around football plenty. So maybe I could give him the benefit of the doubt, starting with a small program, running the whole thing. Maybe he can get it. I just... It feels like a lot. Like, you mean to tell me he couldn't go to Florida State and... Coach corners,
backs, yeah.
You know, right. I mean, or something.
By the way, the perfect example for what you were starting to say earlier was when Chris Spielman was under consideration for Ohio State's head coaching job.
Ugh.
I mean, no one could be more pro Ohio State than Chris Spielman,
right.
but he had done no coaching at all.
Right.
And he went interview for the head coaching job and didn't get it. He was furious. I was like, dude,
right.
you haven't done anything to make them think you can handle this job. No one's more intense. No one's more passionate than that guy.
Right.
But that alone doesn't do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is going to sound weird coming from me. I'm actually kind of rooting for Deion in this case.
I mean, I do hope that he succeeds. But, I mean, the other issue is that, you know, what if he is successful? What if he turns Jackson State around? Does he stay?
That's an interesting point. Because Jackson State, like all these lower level schools, are often a launching board to the next level.
Right.
I mean,
but the issue
you brought
is...
up Bobby Hurley earlier. Bobby Hurley coached the University of Buffalo,
right.
brought them to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row, and then split for Arizona State. We
yep.
were all pissed, but Arizona State's a better gig than the University of Buffalo.
Right.
Sorry.
And Bobby Hurley's a little bit different because Bobby Hurley didn't have a 20-year NBA career where
True.
He made ass loads of money.
True.
Primetime made plenty of money. I know he blew a lot of money, but in the end, he made a lot and he stacked a lot and he's been making money
yeah.
ever since. So he doesn't, money's not an issue. He doesn't need money. So theoretically, if there was a coach who was going to get a small program to prominence and just ride it out, it could be Deion because he doesn't really need the money to go. You know, and
right.
I guarantee the one thing
right.
that will come out of this, he financially will fill gaps of that program, right? Because a lot of your historically black programs are just drowning in debt, right? Like the school, like the football team, like the entire schools, and then the sports programs are even worse. The facilities suck. Everything is terrible, right? Just
okay.
for the most part. And so I guarantee you he will fill a lot of the financial gaps. So the question is, does he get them to a level of prominence where he has to make a decision? That's, I think, one of the biggest things to watch over the next couple years.
That's an interesting point. I also would say that coaching basketball or managing baseball is a ton easier than being a head coach of a football team because there's just a lot fewer people, a lot fewer moving parts. I mean, in baseball, if you're a manager, you're not teaching fundamentals. You're making pitching change decisions. As a basketball coach, yeah, you've got a philosophy and a style, and you're coaching that, but you're coaching the game only, not managing, you know, well, the guards are doing this and the forwards are doing that. So that's a real big challenge for him, and I'm genuinely curious and actually wishing him well. So
coach him
anyway,
up.
Interesting thing.
Coach him up, Prime.
You ready to roll?
Yep.
All right, thank you for listening. This is we are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Please reach out to us. Again, bonus episode, so it's all sports. We'll let you know in the intro, but I hope you listened to the last episode too because we covered a lot of deep shit. Steven, as always, good talking to you, and we're done.
Later.